Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading today first six verses, which are now closed the book and I can't find. But somewhere in here, there they are. Okay. Okay, thank you. Lord Shiva was insulted at a sacrifice because he failed to stand up for Daksha, and Daksha became very angry and annoyed and offended and overcome by false ego. And the result of that is now to be seen. So one thing we should just back up a little bit, this third, fourth, even fifth canto, part of the fifth canto, is dedicated to the children of Kardama Muni and Svayambhuva Manu. So Svayambhuva Manu, there were five, we call them dap up, Devahuti, Akuti, Prashuti, and Uttanapad and Priyavata. And those five lineages are being studied in these cantos. So we looked at the daughters of Deva. We looked at Devahuti, and then many verses dedicated to her daughters and how they got married and how they had children. And now we're looking at Prashuti, who married Daksha and had 16 daughters. 16 daughters, because the idea was that they were supposed to have children and they would propagate the universe. So of their 16 daughters, one was Sati, and she had a unique position because she was the youngest of all 16. And as is common, the youngest daughter is the pet of the father. And so Sati was very dear to Daksha. And he was asked by Lord Brahma to give this most precious daughter of his to Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. He's extremely exceptional in that he's one of the guna avatars. He's not even a jiva, really. He's his own tattva. It's described in the Brahma Samhita that he's compared to yogurt. Krishna is milk and Lord Shiva is yogurt. He's his own energy, and he has his own place, his own planet, Kailash, and he has his eternal consort, who is Sati, who comes to him in many different ways. And we're going to see she's going to have there's some kind of transformation they have on TV. You get like this transformation where they kind of change your whole house or your whole life. Extreme makeover. Yeah, so extreme makeover. She's going to have an ultra extreme makeover, Sati. So because Sati was so dear to Daksha, and because Daksha had been her, he was a good father. It wasn't like he was always demoniac or nasty or obnoxious or any of those things. He was definitely overcome by envy of Lord Shiva. He didn't really like giving Sati to Lord Shiva because he felt that he wasn't of the caliber that he would like for her in terms of his material situation. He lived under trees and he was covered with ashes and he had skulls on his body. And I mean, he just wasn't the kind of person you'd want to talk to your neighbors about, you know. So he became, Daksha always had kind of an ill feeling. And it was in his mind, and actually came out of his mouth, that he actually kind of blamed Lord Brahma, who was his father, or grandfather indirectly. He blamed him for, you told me to marry this schlep, and now I did, and you know, look what happened. He's not even being respectful properly. He's not behaving properly. And now so much aggravation is there. And it's all your fault. But I did it because you told me to, and now is a problem. And so he becomes, you know, very offensive, overcome by anger. But Sati didn't see it. She wasn't there, and she didn't see it. She didn't experience it. And so for her, she still had this remembrance of Daksha as her dear father, as someone who really loved her more than anybody. And, you know, she had sisters. How many of them? Who remembers? 15 sisters. She had 15 sisters, and you can imagine they were all married and they had their kids and, you know, so many things. It's a big family, big family. So now there's going to be this exceptional gathering. And as is common for ladies, she wanted to go. She really wanted to go. She really wanted to go. And she, you know, she was seeing all the demigods and their wives were flying overhead in their celestial planes. She could see them going. They were all dressed up in their nicest clothes. And she hadn't seen her family in a long time. And she had this remembrance of her father as being very affectionate to her. And also she wanted to see her other, the other celestial denizens. So she, went to her husband and requested him permission to go, knowing that he wasn't going to go. He had had a bad experience. She heard there was some little rift between her and between Shiva and her father, and she didn't really understand the depth of it. She wasn't present. She didn't really understand the amount of ill feeling and ill will and cursing and counter-cursing that had gone on in that assembly. But for Lord Shiva, it was very poignant. And he knew that, and he speaks in the verses that we're summarizing, he speaks how he knew that because Daksha was overwhelmed by envy, he was envious of Lord Shiva's position. And because he was overwhelmed by envy, his intelligence became covered over. He had anger, and it was misplaced anger. Later we'll see that there's such a thing as anger which is placed properly. But Daksha's anger was not placed properly. His anger destroyed his intelligence. And we see that progression. Excuse me, microphone. We see that progression in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Contemplation of the objects of the senses. In this case, the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. The idea, the material desire, I want to be worshipped. And I want the most exalted Lord Shiva, bow down, mister. You're my son-in-law. You have to show me proper respect. I want that respect. And because you didn't give it to me, now I'm angry, right? And I'm envious, and I'm angry because I didn't get what I wanted. And what's going to happen from that anger? Intelligence is lost. And then one falls down. And this is what's going to happen to Daksha. So Lord Shiva saw that. He saw that with his transcendental vision. He could see. It was like previews of the coming attractions. He saw the whole thing. And so he cautioned Sati at first and told her, it's better you don't go. Really, it's better you don't go. Your father is going to be very disrespectful to you. You don't think he will be because you remember him very fondly, and rightfully so. He's an exalted person, and he always loved you very much. But now, because you're married to me and because he's mad at me, to the point of insanity, temporary insanity. He kind of flipped the switch into hysterical anger. Because of that, he's going to disrespect you. And you're going to be sorry. So I'm warning you in advance that he's going to be so offensive to you that, and that offensiveness or that neglect that you're going to experience at his hands, it's going to be more than you can tolerate. Now, Sati was a unique person, and we're going to see later on that she was a pretty fired up lady, quite literally. So Lord Shiva knew Sati's nature, And he flattered her appropriately while he was trying to tell her, you're going to be sorry if you go to this thing. The insults that you're going to receive are going to be so painful to you that it's going to be worse than death. We have that in Bhagavad Gita, too, where Krishna tells Arjuna that for one who has been famed, infamy is worse than death. And for one who has been loved as Sati, then neglect and even negative sentiment is worse than death. It's going to be intolerable for you. You're not going to be able to handle it. But she didn't listen. And it's explained, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his, Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary on this section of the Bhagavatam that actually she had an ulterior motive. It wasn't that she was just going to wear pretty clothes and put on her best earrings and get a necklace that she hadn't gotten an opportunity to wear before and show off her Easter bonnet with all the flowers on it. She had an ulterior motive. She was hoping against hope that she would be able, by her affectionate relationship with her father, she would be able to change his mind, change his heart. She would be able to convince him that it wasn't good for him to be inimical to her husband, Lord Shiva, and she would be able to change his perspective. That was really her intention. And she didn't speak that to Lord Shiva, obviously, because Lord Shiva would have discouraged her. So she worked under the premise that, you know, I'm just a girl and I want to wear my nice clothes and I want to see my family and I want to do all the stuff that women do and you got to let me go. Please, please, oh, please, will you? And it's interesting. I want to tell you a story. I had Prabhupada says in these purports where Sati is begging Lord Shiva to go, that her final attempt was in crying, that she took her ultimate weapon, her astra, and she started to cry because she thought if she started to cry, then he would let her go, but he didn't. But anyway, little aside story, I was, it was 1972, and Srila Prabhupada wanted a GBC person for India. So Jagadish, my former husband, he was in New Vrindavan. And for some reason, unbeknownst to me, he volunteered to be the GBC of India, or Bombay. In India, I think at that time it was all of India. So I was pregnant, and when I was in Toronto. And when I heard that he was going to go to India, I flipped. I was so upset because at that time, you know, the thought was you go to India and you get sick. And, you know, when Jai Pataka Maharaj went to India, he went with a whole trunk of granola and vitamins. That's all he brought. Because the idea was, you know, you're going to get sick and die there if you don't, you know. So he had to bring things to eat. He had to make sure he had a lot of supplements and that was the consciousness. So the thought of going there and being, I had one child, I was pregnant with another, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to go to India. How am I going to live in India? If he would have said it now, I would have gone, yes. But it didn't exactly hit me that way at the time. So I got in the car and I drove from Toronto to New Vrindavan at night by myself. I just got in the car and I just floored it. And I got to New Vrindavan and I went right to Srila Prabhupada's room. I didn't ask anybody anything. I didn't ask for permission. I just went and I opened the door and I went into Prabhupada's room and I was quite upset. And I said, you know, how could this be? And you're going to send him my children and blah, blah, blah. And so Prabhupada was very kind. He was very understanding. And he said, yes, you'll have to take her to Bombay and get her a very nice apartment. That's what he said. He'll say, of course, who wants to go to Bombay? But anyway, at that time, I guess it was better. Vrindavan was very rural, and there weren't very many amenities. But then when I left the room, I was told, Srila Prabhupada said, just see, the power of a woman is in her tears. He said, by crying, she will get what she wants. So this is a similar purport to here. In this section, Prabhupada basically says the same thing, but Sati didn't get what she wanted. And Lord Shiva held his ground because he knew what would happen, and he was very clear about the catastrophe that was about to take place. Sati, on the other hand, didn't know. And so she was assuming that things would work out. And not only work out, but work out for the better, in that Lord Shiva would change his mind and become a good friend of the family. He would regain his affection for not only her, but also her husband. And so she decided to go anyway. Now, remember last week here, we were discussing the difference between a first-class servant and a second-class servant. Do we remember what that was? What is first-class servant? Yeah, without having to be told. So when Sati started to go, she went really fast because she didn't want Lord Shiva to stop her. So she immediately, you know, she must have gotten all dressed up, however she did that, and then she took off. So Nandeshwara, who was Lord Shiva's best servant, he anticipated Lord Shiva's desire that she not go alone to this thing. And not only she not go alone to this thing, but that she not go unannounced and unsurrounded by pomp and ceremony. It was very important that she came properly attired, not only in terms of her person, but also in terms of her prestige. She had to have the proper entourage. So Nandeshwar created that, and he took, first of all, to protect her, just in case she needed a little bit of military assistance. He took all his cohorts, and they, knowing Shiva's desire, without him having to say anything, because he didn't even want her to go, but she was going anyway, so if she's going to go, then better she goes with an entourage. So he provided that. And she went with a great entourage. She was in a palanquin, and she had so many musicians singing songs and praising Lord Shiva, praising her. And in that way, she went to this big party. But she didn't even get to be insulted verbally. She entered the assembly, and she looked around, and she was very astute immediately. Her mother and her sisters, they all came and greeted her and offered her gifts, but she wasn't even paying attention to them. She wasn't even conscious, really, of what they were doing. You can imagine the picture, you know, they're kind of hugging her and she's looking over their shoulder. And she's scanning around and she sees there's no offering for Lord Shiva here. No one is offering any respect. And not only that, but my father, he's not even greeting me. He's not even saying, hello, how are you? What's happening? You know, he's not even acknowledging my presence. And he's glancing at me with angry eyes. So this alone, just this physical exchange, what she saw happening, he didn't have to say anything. And she wasn't there to hear what he did say about Lord Shiva, which would have been even worse. But she didn't hear. And so, but just that expression was enough to make it clear to her that her mission was not going to be accomplished. She was not going to be able to change this situation. And the offense that Daksha was committing in not only neglecting but offending, not properly worshiping her husband, was more than she could tolerate. As explained, Lord Shiva knew it was going to happen. Now, it's interesting here that in these verses where Sati is screaming at, and one can hear in your mind's ear, one can hear the anger in Sati's rebuke of her father, telling him that he's less intelligent, which is not a very common thing that a daughter would take the position of really severely chastising her father, and not only severely chastising him, but chastising him in public. And not only chastising him in public, but chastising him when he was the kind of master of ceremonies. He was the honored guest at this assembly. And so in front of all his friends and in front of all his well-wishers, she let him have it. And she didn't mince words either. She spoke of his envy. She spoke of his lack of intelligence. She spoke of his lack of awareness of how to see a great person. She belittled his character by explaining that great souls see only the good in people. They maximize their good qualities, right? And they try, if they see some deficit, then their goal is to try to assist. But rather, Daksha, he was looking at a person with only good qualities and finding fault. This is the quality of someone whose intelligence is not good. It's something wrong, irregular. Lost his intelligence, forgot to take his medicine. He wasn't acting properly because he was seeing bad where there was none. And not only was he seeing bad where there was none, but he was taking the initiative to blaspheme, offend, and decry Lord Shiva in public. And now Sati, his own daughter, who was so dear to him in so many ways previously, now he was forgetting her completely, ignoring her, offending her by not being affectionate, not being warm, not greeting her properly. So even her, who was faultless, she didn't do anything. All she did was come to see her family. But he was offending her. And he was offending Lord Shiva, who also committed no offense. So she decided to pulverize him in public. And Prabhupada speaks that her anger is justified. So you have these two different uses of anger. In one case, motivated by envy, and in the other case, motivated by a desire to protect her father also, and herself and Lord Shiva from blasphemy. Because when one, and Prabhupada, it actually says in this purport, it's very strong, Prabhupada says that her example is to be followed. Now, I don't know how many of us are able to burn ourselves up in a mystic fire the next time someone says something bad about Andre, but we should be conscious that we have to protect our ears. And this is the point that Prabhupada makes. He says that we really need to choose our association very, very carefully. And persons who engage in blasphemous or disrespectful, he says, disrespecting authorities. That's what the words Prabhupada uses. We should be very careful not to associate with persons who have a disrespectful attitude towards authorities. Now, think about this for a minute, what the ramifications of this are on our spiritual life. That when we are associating with persons who we feel friendly towards, then our guard is down. Right? We have a loving relationship with our equals, or we have a respectful relationship, hopefully, with our seniors. And when we're with these people, our guard is down. We're there to have loving exchanges. So if that person is blasphemous towards a senior person, a person worthy of respect, that taking that in and allowing it to be nurtured within the mind and within the senses, it has an effect that goes on and on and on. It's like acid. You put acid and it gradually burns holes in metal, right? At first you may put it there and you may just see some smoke, but gradually it will burn right through. So even Lord Shiva, he described to Sati that when you hear blasphemous information coming from someone with whom you have a close relationship, that will be so detrimental to your heart. It will actually burn holes in your heart. So there, Prabhupada is cautioning us that we as devotees must be extremely careful that when we associate with people, especially intimately, close friends or people we perceive as well-wishers, if they tend to speak illy of persons deserving respect, we should avoid their association. And Prabhupada goes through a whole purport, several purports actually, long ones, where he describes what we should do, you know, that we should, if we're a Kshatriya, we should kill the person, and then if it's too bad, we should kill ourselves, we should cut out their tongue. And actually, the deprogrammers used to do this. All of you familiar with these deprogrammer people? This whole thing? Huh? You just heard about them? Oh, okay. so timely then, that they would read or say blasphemous things, and then they would say, okay, so now, according to your scripture, you're supposed to either cut out my tongue, kill me, or kill yourself. What are you going to do about it? And if you can't do any of those things, then you can't be a devotee anymore. Huh? Yeah, but they couldn't leave because, yeah, they couldn't leave. So they were in a situation where they couldn't leave, they couldn't cut out the tongue, they couldn't kill themselves, and they couldn't kill the offender. So it was kind of like, okay, now I sprinkled water on you, now you're a Muslim, you know? So you got defrocked immediately. That was their preaching. So it's very, very important, Prabhupada. And it's interesting, Rupa Goswami in Upadeksamrit, he speaks for the first few verses, Nectar of Instruction, he speaks for the first few verses every time, avoid the association of non-devotees, avoid the association of persons who will drain your spiritual energy and who will hurt your ability to hear from others. Most important, because respectful persons are the way that we make advancement in devotional service. So faith is created by association. Someone posted a proverb recently from the Irish, and it said, fear knocked on the door, but faith answered, and no one was there. So if we're fearful, there's something in the material world that's causing us distress, it's by getting faith from the association of devotees, by hearing from great souls, that our fear is dissipated. And therefore, when we go into the material world, there is no fear, because we're taking nectar from great devotees. But if someone hurts our ability to hear from great devotees, then they put us in a very vulnerable position, because now our faith is compromised. And the ability of that devotee to guide us and help us and inspire us by what they say is compromised, because now we've heard something bad. And we're thinking, well, should I hear from you? Are you really all that you cut out? I thought you were a saintly person, but maybe now maybe you're not as saintly as I thought you were. You know, maybe you're not that advanced. So we have to be very careful. And Prabhupada cautions us that we should be very, very careful to avoid the association of persons who blaspheme respectful people. So here's Sati. She's watching this whole thing, and then she starts to speak very, very clearly, very succinctly, very loudly. No one challenges. And no one challenges Daksha either. That's another point Prabhupada makes. That here's this assembly. We have the same thing in the gambling match arena, where great persons who know what's right and who know what's being done is wrong don't say anything, because they're afraid of their position, right? That's why, for instance, Chanaka Pandit, he wanted to be in a situation where he was not at all supported by his employer. Because once you're beholden to your employer, then when something goes wrong, you don't say anything because you might lose your job. Right, even, and this is a big problem. This is why Brahmins don't work for others. It's a sudra thing. Prabhupada used to say, they get so many degrees and then they go around knocking, please give me some work, please give me some work, please give me some work. But then, especially in the present job market, you get some work and then you have to worry, right? If I say the wrong thing, if I do the wrong thing, if I don't put in enough hours, if I don't, you know, do what the guy who's in charge of me says, and I may lose my job if I have a sika, if I wear tila. But Prabhupada tells a very nice story about one Muslim factory owner who was famous for being not very nice. And he had a whole assembly line of workers who were supposedly of Hindu caste. And he told them, you're not to wear any kind of marks that say that you're Hindu while you're working for me. If you do, you get fired. So the next day, only one person came with tilak on. And he said to him, I told you not to wear. He said, well, then, he said, this is very important to me. It's my relationship with God. It's, you know, it's a symbol of my devotion, and I can't not wear it. So he was so impressed by his determination and his strong belief in his, in what he was doing that he said, okay, he's the only one. All of you now, if you wear, you're fired. But he can wear every day because he took a strong stand. And here also Sati is taking a strong stand. But these wimpy other people like Lord Brahma and Brihaspati, they didn't say anything because they didn't want to disturb Daksha. They didn't want to get on his bad side. And the results will be very deleterious, as you will see. No, they should have said something. Yes. Oh, that's right. Brahma didn't come. He was smart enough that he didn't come. Because he also knew there was going to be a disaster. So he didn't show up. That's right. Thank you. But everybody else did. And everybody else winds up in big trouble.
When you said that they played songs, did you not say anything? You said that no one... I was getting the impression that the songs would not say something in this situation.
No, they didn't say. Not that they shouldn't. They didn't. Yeah, they didn't say. Prabhupada says they should have spoken, but they were afraid of their position. And so therefore they remained silent. And then they became culpable. It's interesting. There's this discussion going on about who gets the karma for the misbehavior of disciples and devotees. And there, you know, there's a whole discussion whether it's shared by the temple president, by the GBC as a body. Because Prabhupada wrote one letter and he told the GBC members that if you're a GBC man, then that's a very big position. But that very big position also has big reaction. And so if you don't act properly, then you'll share in the sinful reactions of those that are under you. And so you get this whole conglomerate of people who are sharing sinful reactions. So if you're the GBC, the temple president, and the initiating guru, you're in a big responsibility because the karma comes that way. And then you have to pass it up really fast. So you have to be connected. So that's why the connection is so strong, that we act rightly because we're connected with the disciplic succession. Otherwise, we get a reaction. And that's what happened. These people didn't act properly for the wrong reason. They didn't act properly for the wrong reason. They were afraid of their prestige. They were afraid of their position. They weren't going to get whatever they wanted to get. And so they didn't do the right thing. And the result was they got in trouble later. You'll see that that comes later. So they didn't say anything, but Sati did say something. And Prabhupada praises her. He said it was a good thing that she did. It was right, and we should follow her example. We should follow her example. Burn yourself up next time someone says something. So, but at least speak up for what you know is right. And, of course, you have to speak up properly. You can't just, she had the adhikar. She knew what she could do. Actually, Prabhupada explains that by her potency, she could have destroyed Daksha herself. She didn't have to depend on anything else. But because she knew it would be embarrassing to Lord Shiva if his wife defeated his enemy, she decided the best thing to do was to kill herself, which takes us to the verse where we are today. And I hope these things are where they're supposed to be. Someone tell me where we're supposed to be. Is this it? No. Why am I in Dhruva Maharaj? Let's see. 4:27, 4:25, there it is, 4:27. Okay, here it is. Tataksvabhartus
charanam
Dadarsha deho hata kalma sa sati. Sadhya prajaj javala samadhi jagnina. Somebody else? Yes, no? Satasvabhartus charanam bhujasavam jagatgurus chintayati nachaparam dadarsha deho hatakalmasa sati. Okay, one Vaishnavi would like to chant? No? Okay, let's read. Tata there, Svabhartu, okay, do it together. Svabhartu of her husband. Let's do it together. It's up on the board. Let's do it together. Charana Ambuja Asvam, on the nectar of the lotus feet. Jagatguru, of the supreme spiritual teacher of the universe. Chintayati, meditating. Na, not. Cha, and. Aparam, not other than her husband. Didarsha, saw. Deha, her body. Hatta kalmasa, taints of sin being destroyed. Sati, sadya, soon. Prajaval, burned. Samadhi, ja, anina, by the fire produced by meditation. Translation. Sati concentrated all her meditation on the holy lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is the supreme spiritual master of all the world. Thus, she became completely cleansed of all taints of sin and quit her body in a blazing fire by meditation on the fiery elements. Someone want to read? Who has the mic? You have the mic. You get to start. Not working. Okay, I'll read. Sati at once thought of the lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is one of the three great personalities of Godhead in charge of the management of the material world, and simply by meditating on his... Is it working now? And simply by meditating on his lotus feet, she derived such great pleasure that she forgot everything in relationship with her body.
This pleasure was certainly material because she gave up her body for another body that was also material. But by this example, we can appreciate the devotee's pleasure in concentrating his mind on and attention on the lotus feet of the
Supreme Lord.
Of the Supreme Lord Vishnu or Krishna. There is such transcendental bliss in simply meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord that one can forget everything but the Lord's transcendental form. This is the perfection of yogic samadhi or ecstasy. In this verse, it is stated that by such meditation, she became free from all contamination. What was the contamination? The contamination was her concept of the body derived from daksha, but she forgot the bodily relationship in trance. The purport is that when one becomes free from all bodily relations within this material world and simply places himself in the position of an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, it is to be understood that all the contamination of his material attachment has been burned by the blazing fires of transcendental ecstasy.
It is not necessary for one to manifest a blazing fire externally. For if one forgets all his bodily relationships within this material world and becomes situated in a spiritual identity, it is said that one has been freed from all material contamination by the blazing fire of yogic samadhi, or ecstasy. That is the topmost perfection of yoga. If one keeps his bodily relationships within this material world and poses himself as a great yogi, he is not a bona fide yogi. In Srimad Bhagavatam...
So, here we have Sati. She just finished her explanation. She goes into a yogic trance. And, you know, there's a character in American history named Nathan Hale. He was a spy, and he was killed by the British. He was a spy for the colonies. And when he was killed, he said, "My only regret is that I have but one life to give to my country." Sati wasn't in that situation. She had unlimited bodies. And what she did was she just changed. So she left this body and she went into another body because she has an eternal, loving relationship with Lord Shiva. So she always will be his consort, always. So life after life, birth after birth, she'll always be his consort. And for her, that's her ultimate spiritual position. But going back a little bit, Sati is showing us by example how to refrain from association with persons who are detrimental to our spiritual life. In this case, she was breaking her tie with her father, Daksha, because he was engaged in behavior that was detrimental to his spiritual life and hers as well. And so, therefore, she took a very strong position, which is to be emulated in one sense, Srila Prabhupada says, but probably can't be emulated in another, in the sense that we don't have the ability to do that, burn up ourselves. But still, to speak up, to make the position clear, this was Sati's example. And especially in regards to devotees, that devotees are very special people. And speaking disparagingly about them has extremely deleterious effects. We can see, even with Suruchi, right? She spoke about Dhruva in a bad way, and she caused him unnecessary suffering. He was only 5 years old, and his position as a great devotee of Krishna had not yet really become manifest yet. Right, he hadn't worshipped Vishnu, and he hadn't achieved that relationship, that darshan with him yet. But still, because she blasphemed him, and because she caused him so much disturbance, she had to suffer. We see with Ambarish and Durvasa the same thing. That Durvasa was very powerful. He was a very great sage and a devotee in himself. You can imagine he went directly to Vishnu. Right, he went right to Vishnu's abode and said, "Hey, listen, I got this problem. You know, could you do something about it?" And Vishnu said, "No, I can't do anything about it. So you have to go to my devotees." So devotees are very special people, and it's very we often look at ourselves and we try to make resolutions that we won't speak negatively, we won't blaspheme. But here, this is not even speaking themselves. This is just hearing. Just hearing. Yes. It could. Why not? Lord Chaitanya defines pure devotee in many different ways, and one of them is he who even chants the holy name once, and another is he who, when seen, reminds others of Krishna. So if I have a shirt on that says Krishna Lunch, and then people see me, they remember Krishna, then I'm a devotee, right? And it's better to err on the side of caution than to err on the side of making a mistake that could cost you your devotional life. So if you're going to make a mistake, better to be too cautious about associating or what you hear. Very important to be careful about what we hear. Hearing is a primary activity of devotional service. It's the primary activity of devotional service. And so if we don't hear carefully, selectively, then all problems come. And so here Sati is clearing the air and making it very, very clear to everybody in the assembly who's at fault here. What is the situation here? Krishna also did that with the Pandavas, that he made it very clear who was at fault. Before he would allow the battle of Kurukshetra to take place, he made it very clear that the Pandavas were not antagonists in the fight, that if they had their way, five villages would have been good enough. But because the antagonists were so determined to do the wrong thing, there was no other alternative. And here also we have the same thing. Sati was trying to make good of it. She went against her husband's better judgment. She went knowing that she would be disrespected. She went with the intention of trying to change her father's mind around. But she was unable to do that, and therefore she had to clear the air. She had to make it very clear that Shiva was blameless, flawless, and that the fault was on the part of her father. So time is just about up, so I'll ask if there's any questions. Yes? My favorite if questions. I love them. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Right. Well, You have to ask yourself if you have the adhikar, if you have the privilege, the position, the right to say. And a devotee, if he says, will say to make things better, not just to get it off his chest, or not just to advertise it on Facebook. I know how bad you are, and now everyone else is going to know how bad you are too. No, that's not the motive. The motive has to be that you intend to make things better. Okay, so if you look in your heart and you see this person is doing something wrong, it's harmful. Maybe it's harmful to them. Maybe it's harmful to, let's say, a new devotee. Somebody's telling something to a new devotee, which you see will be very detrimental to that person. Then you may have to speak strongly. But you better watch your motive. Because if your motive is born of envy, if your motive is born of the desire to get even in any way, it's going to come back on you. It's described as like taking poison and expecting someone else to die from it. It doesn't work. When you drink poison, you die from it. So, therefore, you have to check your motive, even if it's the truth. If you have a truth and saying it isn't going to do anything positive, why say it? Why say it? Question? Why say it? But, that wonderful word.
You know, there's something that you feel that detrimental to somebody's, you know, Christian consciousness or whatever, and you say something, you know, to who, I guess, or maybe to his story.
Right, exactly. You have to, if you have the motive to improve the situation, then you have to look and see what your best option is for putting that situation right. You're going over to someone and saying, you know, you're just a blasphemous, envious creep and you better shut your mouth. May not do the trick. So you may have to find a different avenue to change the situation. And it may require a lot of contemplation. It may not be something you can do right away. You know, you may feel that it needs to be done and it pushes you to do it, but you have to do it right, and that may slow you down. And that slowing down isn't a bad thing. It's something that needs to be there. You need to think. I mean, we have situations in many management situations where somebody or some group of people is doing something or some part of what they're doing is not good. But we can't just go out and because it may be worse, right? We may create a situation where people turn against us. Don't see us as being the good guys, but see us as being the bad guys. So everything has to be very carefully considered. Generally, when you're in anger, you don't consider carefully. Generally. So therefore, the best thing is to put some distance between what's happening and your reaction to it so that your anger will go away. Even the non-devotees say, count to 10. 10 is probably not enough. Try counting to 1,000,000. See if that works. And then when you're in anger, when you're free from negative reasons, then act. But if you're motivated by negative reasons, envy, anger, you're in trouble. And you have to be really honest with yourself, because sometimes, you know, it looks really good on the outside. Well, Prabhu, it was he was just doing the wrong thing. I couldn't stand it. Okay, but if on the inside there's envy and anger, you got to watch out. I mean, Prabhupada got very angry many times, and he was even criticized for being angry. In a public gathering, he became angry because, well, two times that I know of, once because the people were grabbing at the women's saris from off the stage, and once because people were speaking Mayavadi philosophy, and Prabhupada couldn't stand it. But his position was justified. He wasn't doing it so that people would think he was greater or better, or he would get even with somebody. He had no intention of that. He was protecting the ears of us and the women. And therefore, he was acting rightly. So you have to, you know, examine your reason. Yes. Chaitanya's next. Go ahead.
How does Sati's situation, especially for us, how does that coincide with the Maryata Bhari Krama, I think,
Marada.
Disrespecting elders, because that's her father. She's correcting, you know, and if it is a situation like that for us, even if we have the adhikar.
Well, if you're confused, don't do it. When in doubt, leave it out. But it wasn't my Radha Vatigrama for her, because Shiva was in a superior position to her father, both in her life as her husband, and also just in terms of his position was greater than Daksha. And also, remember, she didn't, she acted in such a way, her first attempt was to rectify the situation. That's what her intention was to do, was to show Daksha that he was doing wrongly. But she saw that he was too far gone. So she decided that she would get rid of herself, because she didn't want to be connected. She knew there was going to be disaster. And since she couldn't avert it, she decided not to be part of it. But for ourselves, if you're feeling doubt whether this person is superior, whether you should speak, then seek guidance from somebody else. You know, and be very cautious. Move very cautiously. It's just like if you're diving into a situation, a body of water, and you don't know what's at the bottom, you don't know how far the bottom is down, then you're very cautious because you could break your neck. And many people do. So you enter very cautiously. When you're in a dark place and you don't know where you're going, you walk very cautiously because you could hurt yourself. So in this situation also, it could be very dangerous. So therefore, you walk very cautiously. And approach with a humble mind. Just like Arjuna, he was certainly speaking to someone very much superior to him, Krishna. But some things Krishna said he didn't agree with, or they seemed contradictory. They confused him. So he had to ask. But he asked in a very humble and very submissive way, I don't get this. Could you explain this to me? He wasn't challenging. He wasn't disrespectful. And so his answers were, he received appropriate answers. My Radha is, stepping over somebody who is superior, with the intention of getting something for yourself more quickly, perhaps, you know, or better. Like Vidura, for instance, which is where that expression is used with Maitreya, he could have gone to Uddhava. Uddhava was much closer to Krishna than Maitreya. Maitreya was an impersonalist, and he just happened to hear from Krishna while Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, who was Krishna's most intimate friend, practically. So, an advisor. Actually, Uddhava was Krishna's advisor. So, Vidura, if he had gone to Uddhava over Maitreya, it would have been offensive because it would have been to get more nectar. But he avoided it and he went to Maitreya, even though Maitreya was superior in one sense, but inferior in other ways, because of fear of that kind of apparat. Actually, even Vidura was more advanced than Maitreya. He didn't have to ask him anything. But he did it in order to elevate Maitreya.